Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what you're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride. All
right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Come on, come on. Turn the radio on a Saturday and I won't be long.
Don't get me wrong. I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not America's sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I'll tell you, if you read this book, I'm writing this book also for the Republicans. Because I really feel, you know, deep down in my heart that, you know, Republicans are just as patriotic as everybody else, and they want a country handed off to the next generation that is just as strong as the one we inherited.
It's so generous and charitable of Jim Acosta to write a book for to Jim Acosta mansplain to Republicans, and also to say that he does think that we are as patriotic as, I guess, whatever it is that he is.
The title of that book, The Enemy of the People, A Dangerous Time to Tell the Truth in America.
Oh, Jim Acosta, what a hero. I want to talk to Gabe Pfeiffer about heroes. So, Gabe Pfeiffer joining us in studio. We have not had you in studio, at least when I've been in the room for a while.
Right, yeah. It's been a little while. I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Speaking of heroes, and you are an expert at this from what I understand, my family is on the journey through the Marvel movies.
Oh, yes.
I have not really, I mean, other than Iron Man, I hadn't really seen any of them.
I literally put together just recently, I'm not sure if you've seen it, it's a lesson plan for summer viewing, and you write little one-page essays about each of the movies. And I did this for my niece. I consider her my niece. She's the daughter of a close friend, because she'd never seen it. And she fancies herself as something of a fiction writer. And I'm like, you haven't seen these movies? What are you doing? You have to do it. So I put this little thing together for her. And
so
yeah.
We've seen, so far, my family, I mean, and this is like, maybe we started doing this 2 weeks ago, maybe.
Okay.
We've seen Captain America, The First Avenger.
Okay.
Because we're doing it in order.
Okay, well, you're doing it chronological as opposed to release order.
Let me say this. We're doing it in order of the first article that came up that said that there was an order.
Okay, all right.
You're going to be like, that's not the right order. And I'll be like, oh, man, dang it.
Everybody has a preference.
So, Captain America, First Avenger.
All right.
The next one was supposed to be Captain Marvel, but until Tuesday, it was $20. And I was like, it looks like in the middle of June, we're going to be able to rent this. So, we're going to put that.
Hold on.
So, then we watched Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, The Hulk.
Incredible Hulk.
Thor.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I didn't mind that one. And then,
no kidding.
We put Thor on. And, well, my husband goes, what movie's next? And I just said Thor with a smile on your face. He goes, yeah, I see you.
Yeah, I see you.
Yep.
I'm like, you think he's beautiful.
Everybody knows.
He's beautiful. Honestly, I don't even know that I thought the movie was that great. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention to the movie. I don't know.
Maybe I was distracted.
There's actually a comedic line in a movie way down the road where basically everyone acknowledges how beautiful he is. Yeah. It's kind of hilarious.
Duh. I mean, like, and I will say that the women who are in these movies are stunning as well.
Oh,
like, there's just a lot of beautiful people.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yes. Yep. So we did The Hulk, then we did Thor, and then we went back and watched Captain Marvel because we could rent it.
Yeah, because it just came out. Okay, right.
Which, I got to say, I liked it. And I didn't see, when I put out there, and I know you were smiling, like, is Captain Marvel worth a $19.99? Because if it's going to be rentable here in a week, do I wait or do I just purchase it because I'm going to want to own it anyway? And the resounding response I got ranged from, it's good, but it's not worth the buy. It's terrible. And not many people were like, it's the best one out there.
Yeah,
so
it's low on the totem pole of Marvel movies. And I think part of the thing, too, is that they've been getting progressively better and they've been, you know, diving into their own lore. So this one coming so late and after frickin' Infinity War.
Yeah, which I have not seen.
Exactly. It's kind of a letdown. So you know, I'm sure there's a portion of that.
If Captain Marvel would have come out like during Iron Man 1 in 2 days, it would probably be awesome.
It would have been in line, I think.
But they were both
such a Marvel elitist.
Yeah,
you're like,
I know.
They were both in the theaters at the same time. Infinity War and Captain Marvel were in the theaters at the same time. I'm like, bad marketing. Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have skipped that one altogether.
The next one up is Avengers.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, good?
Yeah.
Katie just did Raise the Roof.
Yes.
Straight out of 1994 or something.
Raise the Roof.
That one really made the universe itself a thing. Mm-hmm. I think that movie really, really solidified it for me.
And so that's up next.
Oh my gosh.
It's between the Glen Carbon Homecoming tonight and Pizza and Avengers.
All right.
So if you're going to the Glen Carbon Homecoming tonight and I'm not there, it's because I'm eating pizza and watching. I won't be eating pizza. I'll eat chicken wings.
So is this, when you say homecoming, is this a town
carnival
kind of deal?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Cotton candy rides that are, you know,
for youngins.
Exciting for kids.
Youngins.
And if I go on it, I'm going to have to take ibuprofen when I get home. But fun, you
I
know,
love a
just a general
carnival.
Get together with your neighbors and celebrate. It's
that
always Father's
fun.
Day weekend. So if you're looking for something fun to do, go to Glen Carbon Homecoming tonight. If you're looking for something at home to do, watch Avengers.
Yes.
So you got options.
I concur with that plan.
Well, this all started out with me talking about Jim Acosta and saying hero in the same sentence.
Mm.
Who knew?
Yes.
Which is why we had to fill all this time with Marvel conversation.
Hero. In his own mind.
You know, it's funny to me to see him come out and you know, like, I keep saying this word mansplaining because I think it's funny because it's like a feminist word. And then I see how like the folks on the left mansplain more than anybody.
Yes.
About everything.
Yes.
To little old me, because I'm a female conservative. And because I'm a conservative, my female card must be cashed in at the door.
See, the thing is, if you're using the word mansplaining in anything other than irony or making fun of it or sarcasm, then yes, you're probably the mansplainer.
Yes, for sure. You know, I've had people explain to me why my support of Donald Trump is against women, and they are men telling me that, and I'm like, I don't think this is how this works. I'm so confused right now. I need a map to know who can say what to whom and when. And I've the only thing that I've understand in the key in the bottom right of this map that doesn't exist is that as a conservative, even though I am a woman, I should just shut my mouth.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think, you know, there's nothing more misogynist than a male feminist. If you've ever noticed that, you know, there's no one more racist than the white knights coming to defend the black people or whatever. So there's something about leftism, I think, that turns the entire universe on its head.
It's because it is so complicated. There are so many different lines connecting one side of this you know, universe, if you will, to the other, that they get crisscrossed so much. Mm-hmm. And you get confused along the way. And you know, when I look at what President Trump has been able to do in office, and I look at how he has deregulated so much of the economy to see it roar up.
Oh yeah,
that is a very equal way to raise all boats. And
we see it.
Really see it and feel it. And I've noticed too in the conversations that I have with people on the air and also people who I'm connected with that I've brought on air who I continue those conversations offline that aren't white males. Maybe they're females, maybe they're, you know, not old white males, maybe they're millennials like me, maybe they're minority groups. Even if that like love and massive amount of MAGA support for the president isn't there, they can't deny the good that is happening in this country.
Yeah. And what it's actually hilarious watching them try.
Yeah.
About the it's
exactly.
Like, yeah, well, that.
Big butt.
Yeah,
hey, big
sure.
butt.
Can I say how funny it is that we're talking about Jim Acosta, who is supposed to be this bipartisan reporter, and he has to highlight the fact that his book is also for Republicans too.
That's the other half of the country.
You're a reporter. You're not supposed to have partisanship either way. You're supposed to be straight up on the line reporting to us the facts, and yet you're highlighting that this could also be for Republicans too.
Yeah.
What?
It's pretty crazy because it's like just highlight it, I don't know. It's a complete lack of self-awareness on mm-hmm. their part in all things. Every time I see it, it's like, you do realize that what you're doing is completely dismantling what you say you want to do. Right.
And overarching all of that lack of self-awareness is this massive elitist mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking that people like, you know, you as a black man, Gabe, and me as a female, millennial, suburban mom, how can I support President Trump? That we are actually either misguided or empty vessels waiting for their elitist lack of self-awareness, you know, snobbery to just ooze all over us. And then we'd like... what was the movie that I was watching here recently? I think it was Wreck-It Ralph, where all those... bugs, like all of a sudden the light goes up in the middle of
and their
eyes go, they look like, you know, TV screens in the old days when it was the marching ants or whatever, and then they just snap and they just fly into the light like yes sir, here I am, Jim Acosta, to take all of your words, let me read your book page for page, because this is the most important thing in the whole world. Jim Acosta is so smart, CNN is the only thing on my television. And then we're just like, all right, yeah, you're right. We see it. We finally see it your way. There's no interest or effort in considering the possibility that a large percentage, especially now, of people in America can see a baby and a heartbeat in a womb and say, that's not really the glob of cells that we were saying it was 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Or to suggest that If we have a healthcare problem, that the immediate solution is to just give the government the keys of the kingdom to say, they're the government. They can provide. They have money machines.
Yeah,
they have a money tree.
In the words of AOC, just pay for it.
Yes,
right?
Just do it.
My wife recently just said that kind of reminds her of the "let them eat cake" line
yes.
from Marie Antoinette. It's just just do. You know, it's coming from a place of, like you said, a lack of self awareness and an elitism together. It's, you know, it kind of reminds me also of Ron Burgundy, you know, explaining the meaning of San Diego.
Exactly. I mean, they forget that we little people have brains of our own,
mm-hmm.
have lives of our own, have circumstances that, you know, we have three people in here right now. We are all living three very different lives.
Yeah,
you know, you are you an empty nester?
Yeah, right now.
You're an empty nester?
Yeah.
I have three little minions at home that suck me dry of energy and money. That's why I'm here, is to make sure that I can go home and
minions.
Yes. And Katie, newly married and bought a house and working and kicking rear at her job every day. You know, we're all doing everything we can to contribute, and we're all working people,
mm-hmm.
and we're all working for reasons that are specific to us.
Yeah.
To think that here we are, a 26-year-old female, 35-year-old female, and
40-something.
I was going to say 36.
Wait, that's a good guess.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly.
No, 40,
I'll take it.
40-something, but yeah.
African-American rocket science person, scientist person in this room together have a lot more in common
mm-hmm.
than if you put me out on the street and found the next white 35-year-old female
right.
and set us next to each other and be like, well, these two people are the same. Let's go find a black man and say these two people. Yeah. And say these.
We could talk it out, right?
Sure. And Katie, I mean, you hang around. You have a massive social life that I just look at from afar and think, that looks incredibly fun and extremely exhausting.
It's exhausting.
And you know, but you talk to these people
mm-hmm.
and they actually talk to you, which is always a story that I enjoy, because
stories I have off air.
People will challenge Katie on her thoughts and beliefs, but Katie, I think they do that because they trust you.
Yes.
And they know that you're a good person. And even at the end of that conversation, when it's like, Katie, I just do not get you, they still love you.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to come to you means that there's something about you that they value and mm-hmm. admire and are kind of willing to get this off their chest with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important thing. But you put all those other 26-year-old females in your life, line them up next to you, you're all different. It's not like it's Katie and everybody else.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is different.
Everyone has a different opinion on those core values that keep getting brought up, those social issues. Everyone has a different stance that you don't fit into a particular box.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad once said, if you get five people in a room and ask them about one subject, you're going to get seven opinions.
Sure.
So, you know, because, right?
Yes.
Because everyone, even internally, we struggle with some of the ways that we construct our opinions on these things.
And for Jim Acosta to say that he's writing that book for Republicans, too, Do you think everybody votes Republican for the same reasons?
Oh, gosh, clearly not.
Absolutely
not at all.
Not at all.
Yeah. And in especially in 2016, and I would imagine in a large part going into 2020, when we're looking at the likes of Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren, there's going to be a significant vote for Trump or a lack of showing up at the polls to support somebody who says, yeah, I'm a democratic socialist. Yeah, I think socialism would be good for this country. It's working everywhere else that it's employed. Oh, wait, no, they won't say that because that's the lie. It's a ridiculous lie.
But we'll do it better.
Exactly. Oh, we're going to be the first great hope for socialism. I think actually the reason we are a great hope for all the people in the world who want to come here is because we don't invoke socialism. More with Gabe Pfeiffer on YouTube at St. John the Philosopher. Go subscribe to his YouTube channel, and we'll discuss this and more. I have a piece of paper in front of me that has the word reparations on it.
Ooh.
I'm going to hand this to you and see what you think about it.
Let's do it.
And I'm going to just let you talk. We'll do that when we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This is a very feminist song of you to pick, Katie.
This is Why do you one hate of men? My favorite bands.
No Doubt.
Love No Doubt.
This is
Gwen Stefani. Oh my gosh.
This was my anthem in seventh grade.
Yes. It's like, oh,
I am oppressed by the man. I mean, the boy.
Guess what song is featured in Captain Marvel?
I know. I heard that, and I looked over at my husband because he was rocking out to the song, and he didn't know what it was at first. And then it got to the I'm Just a Girl part. He goes, oh.
Oh,
no, and I'm like, yeah, obviously. I will say, though, it was fun to be watching all of these. So if you didn't hear us in the last segment, I said that I have not been exposed to Marvel, not because it hasn't been available to me,
obviously,
but because I have not made myself available to Marvel until now. And we are walking through the summer, the Marvel series, according to some random website's order, which seems to be not too terribly disputed.
It's all right.
And we were watching these, and, you know, I have a 9-year-old son, and then I have two daughters, almost 7 and 3. My older daughter really dug watching a girl go in there and kick some butt.
Heck yeah.
And I value that, too. And it's not, like, at the expense of men, you know? Like, that's the thing. Like, Captain Marvel doesn't need to be cool for women or especially for young girls because she's not a man.
Right.
My 6-year-old sees her and goes, that's awesome.
Yes.
And I mean, that's the end of the story. There's no political analysis over the rest of everything about, like, oh, but of course she has to be a girl. And of course they have to play No Doubt. And, you know, like, I can get it as an adult and I can see some of these things. But my kid doesn't see that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She's like, that girl is a superhero and she's awesome. And I think that's cool. And that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much that simple.
My main gripe is that because, you know, she came along.
They allowed a woman to be a superhero.
Yes, clearly. Yeah, that's obvious. The exact opposite of what you were saying. But
whatever you were saying, the converse of that.
Sorry, exactly. I caught Katie while she was drinking.
It's always good to try to get Katie to spit on the board and then watch her explain it to the engineers.
But my problem is I wanted a Black Widow movie.
Mm-hmm.
She earned the single shot, but, you know, then
so that kinda doesn't exist.
It's yeah
yet.
I believe it's on tap, although there's reasons why that's weird. So yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to tell me yet?
I can't tell
Not
you
yet. Okay,
I can't tell you.
All right, but that is.
Oh, I think I know.
Don't
does
ruin
it have
it for
to,
yourself.
Does it have to do with Infinity War?
It has to do with the progression of the narrative.
Okay. You said vaguely. Very vaguely.
Yes.
Well, speaking of Black Widow, Black Panther,
yeah.
There's this article, and I've seen this conversation existing. In the Democratic primary, there are so many conversations that come up that, to me, are cheap shots at buying cheap votes.
Yes.
People who hear the dog whistle that they want to hear, and they go, oh, there's my guy, or there's my girl, or whatever. And The conversation of reparations is one of them. We're speaking in studio here. We've got Gabe Pfeiffer in here with us right now. St. John the Philosopher on YouTube. Go subscribe to him there. Great YouTube channel. And, you know, you're a conservative. You're a scientist. You are a Christian. You're also a Black man. And you don't necessarily have to compromise any of those things at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
to have a political thought.
Yeah, they
on
all
anything.
Live in harmony in my little brain.
You're not mad. You're happy with where you are.
Oh yeah.
Well, this conversation exists about reparations. It's something that I think is a really, really politically advantageous avenue to go down for political candidates to suggest that somehow or another there is a reparation that is going to be owed to a specific people.
Oh yeah, it's pandering with a capital P.
So I want you to tell me a little bit about, you know, what you've read there, what you've heard in the past. What is being proposed right now that you've seen in the conversation of reparations? What is being asked for, and on what grounds do you believe it's being requested?
As best as I can tell, this is, besides being the pandering with a capital P, if we want to give it the most charitable look, it's people trying to right a past wrong with today's money. And we all agree there is a past wrong.
Yes.
Now,
we all agree.
Period. Right, exactly. And we even agree that there is a modern day effect from that past wrong. Now, the question is of the efficacy of using today's money and the efficacy of to whom does it go?
Mm-hmm.
And all of those questions that every time someone tries to answer them, the entire argument falls apart. But still, you know, we're pushing for it, you know, or there are people pushing for it, I should say, who are doing so, I think, specifically because, hey, you know, you're simply, you know, waving the public treasury money at potential voters. And guess what? That benefits the politician who's doing the waving.
So I was speaking with a history teacher about this, and I was saying to this teacher, I was like, so would our country today, on June 14th in 2019, would we be the economic powerhouse that we are today if slavery was never a part of our history? If we wouldn't have been able to, if we would be able to go back and erase everything that slavery was, that the major stain on our past that slavery was, would we be the economic powerhouse that we are today if slavery didn't exist? And this teacher said, no, very likely not. That slavery, because we were massive exporters of agriculture, that slavery is what subsidized and made that all possible. And that as wrong as slavery was, when you consider the success that we have now as a country, that the leg up that our agricultural success provided the country, that is a part of how we got to be where we were right now. And I said, well, if that's the case, in the context of reparations, because this is what we were talking about, I said, don't you think that the disparity that exists now between the average white culture or community and the average black culture or community, don't you think that has to have some sort of historical relationship with the fact that there was an economy booming and building on the backs of one of these groups where the spoils were benefited to the other group? And he said, yeah, I believe that is part of it. But when it comes down to reparations, he was quick to say that reparations were discussed and part of the conversation immediately after slavery was legally ended
mm-hmm.
in our country.
Yeah.
That is a reparation I can get behind. Not like it matters because it was in the mid-1800s.
Done. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, when I'm thinking about this in my head, and I'm thinking about the conversation that exists around this idea of a disparity in cultures, I don't think that anybody can realistically look, and we're not talking about how we got to this point. We're not talking about the reason why it got there. Just generally speaking, can we agree that overall in one community versus the other, that there is an average disparity?
Right. Yes.
There is.
Clearly.
Right?
Yes.
Is that something that we can go back and look at a sin that is 160 years old and longer
mm-hmm.
and say now that there is a check that can be written to purchase the forgiveness of that disparity?
Right.
And I think that when I even when I say that out loud, that just seems absolutely ridiculous.
Quite.
So when you say that there is a check that can be written and you're somebody who supports that, Is there anything more grotesquely political than a statement like that to try to, like we were talking about before, speak to a specific community and be like, I got you.
Yeah.
My checkbook is open. Yeah. And if you come to me, you will get this. Not the policy, but just the general line of thinking that that is adequate.
Yeah, well, at bottom, this the whole reparations idea is based on the idea that, or the, well, the wrong idea that the government can somehow right a historical and basically universal wrong. Right. We can go back pretty far. Right. And trace wrongs that various groups have done to other groups, be they national or tribal or what have you. And you know, the people who've resulted, the children of those people all suffer the consequences of what was done to them in the past. The question is, can a government right that, I guess, universal wrong of your particular circumstance of birth? And the leftist says yes, because the government is God.
Government is always the answer.
Right.
It's the religion.
Yes, exactly. And the you know, right-leaning person says no, because government can't right universal wrongs. It can create, it can foster justice in the here and now, but you can't right a wrong from the past. Not from the distant past, I'll say it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? All of the people who committed slavery, who supported slavery, are dead. All of the people who suffered under slavery are dead. So who is paying what to whom?
Who has a debt to whom?
Exactly.
Yes. Who is indebted and who has that debt? And the reason why I talk about this is because I know that there are some people who are like, slavery happened forever ago and it's over now. I think it's a bit naive to suggest that it still doesn't have an effect on how we live today.
It's simplistic, yes.
But to your point about government not being able to come in and answer the question, mm-hmm, of how do we remedy this, it's really cultural. It's really, and that's not to say like one community needs to fix their own problems and the other community needs to mind their own business. And if you're not having a problem in your community, that everything is cool there. But that's a human problem.
Yes.
And it's a human relationship that needs to be built and fostered. And it just seems so like it's like a prostitution of a governmental entity to suggest that somehow the election of an individual person could right the wrong
of 300
of
years
the of... worst thing that the United yeah. States has engaged
yeah.
in
yeah, exactly.
over the entirety of its history. Mm-hmm. But still, we hear it and we see it. And there, you know, what can we do as a society and as a human community to push this forward? I honestly do think that making the economy stronger to provide more opportunity to people is one of those ways that we can do it.
Definitely.
And
that's
it's our boots and heels and sneakers on the ground here on our everyday lives, where we get to make individual decisions every day to be a part of something that makes tomorrow better than yesterday was. But once again, your point is spot on. The God of government
yeah.
is never going to solve it. And in fact, the only way that those same people who can make those promises to potential voters, the only way they're going to get elected in the next campaign is to not fix the problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, once you discover that the weaponization of a problem is valuable for gaining votes, what incentive do you have of eliminating that problem?
Yeah.
Right? Because there's always another election.
Yeah. And some of these elections every 2 years, I mean, I think when you look at the massive Democratic controlled locations in our country, I mean, grief. San Francisco, California.
The stagnancy of those systems in all of these hugely democratically controlled should tell you exactly where their minds are in fixing those problems.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Biden's been in government for 50 years. So you think this election...
Give him four more years!
He's gonna solve all those problems that he had 50 years to come up with a solution to? No. No, not at all.
Not at all. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to take some phone calls and reactions on this topic. If you would like to join us, 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. We hear these conversations about reparations. We know that there is a cultural disparity. And the left wants to campaign to become the president of the United States. Just like Gabe said, if you gave Joe Biden 54 years, maybe he would solve all the problems. Oh, and cure cancer. What a jerk to not have done that already. What a holdout. You better hurry up. He's 76 years old. I'm just saying. Running out of time. Happy birthday, Donald Trump.
Oh, really?
Donald Trump today. Happy birthday.
Whoa.
It's Flag Day.
And it's Flag Day.
Of course Donald Trump's birthday is on Flag Day. And I think it's the birthday of the United States Army. I'll check that.
Yes, it is.
Like,
obviously, 24 years, I think it is.
Donald Trump's the chosen one. I'm just saying. You heard it here first.
That picture of him hugging the flag.
Though, absolutely. Right there.
That's it.
All right. Back in a second with your phone calls.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.